When the phone rang, Smith was dozing in his chair, the dull light of his desk lamp the only illumination in his shadowy office. Blinking sleep from his eyes, he picked up.
I'll give you three guesses who was just attacked by another button-wearing commando.
Smith's brain snapped instantly alert.
Like the ones in New York?
Right down to the suicide before capture work ethic. Looks like I was right. They work for Refair.
No, it does not add up. You were not a risk when they went after you in New York. I have been thinking that they could be associated with MIR.
The Puerto Rican terrorists? No way, Smitty. They'd have no way to find me unless they followed me from San Juan, and I didn't sense any beady little revolutionary eyes watching me on the plane home. Anyway, I gotta keep this short, seeing as how I'm using that counterfeiter's phone, and right now there's a blown-up commando sleeping in his neighbor's petunia bed. The guy's boss is named Sweet. No front name, but he's in New York.
Oh, that limits the search parameters. Anything else?
There was more than just the one guy Chun cacked back at the office. Sounds like there's a whole goon squad out looking for us right now.
I was afraid of that.
Still, no biggie. They've got a needle in a haystack's chance of tracking us down. And you don't have to worry about us ending up on bloopers, boners, and beheadings. This is where the video was fed. That Sweet guy got the only other copy, so it looks okay on that front.
Very good. I will commence the search for Sweet. In the meantime, the two of you may return home. I will contact you when I learn more.
Check. But don't call for a while. We're going out to eat first. Chun has come into some money and wants to treat.
Well, that doesn't sound like him.
I'm pretty sure I'll wind up paying.
The information was damning enough to topple the United States government. Mark Howard hunched behind his desk in the bowels of CIA headquarters. Although he stared at the swirling screensaver on his computer monitor, his thoughts were miles away. Mark had read the report out of Boston 20 minutes before. Paul Petito was dead. Local authorities had found him on the floor of his basement. He'd couriered his Refair dossier to the president this morning. In those documents was a fresh printout with Paul Petito's name. And Petito was now dead. Perhaps the victim of a secret arm of the executive branch, sanctioned to kill. Anyone who knew about this was at risk. And now Mark Howard knew. Knew for certain.
Why is the president involving me in this thing?
Sometimes it helped Howard to hear things out loud, even if that meant he had to talk to himself. But now, the sense of dread swamped all else. For a long time, Mark merely sat, a shadow among shadows. At long last, a leaden hand reached out and shut off his computer.
Petito's dead, some guy named Smith is in charge of unknown agents, and somehow, I'm now in the middle of it.
Mark's office was eerily quiet. The dark walls close.
Fate is coming for you, Mark. You gotta be ready when it gets here. You gotta be ready.
As he rose to his feet, the first hint of determination clenched his jaw. Mark Howard gathered up his top coat. It was winter, after all. He didn't want to catch a cold on the way to meet his destiny. Johnny Fungillo knew enough to be scared. The others hadn't a clue. They had only seen the old one in action, and even so, they still thought he'd used some simple sleight of hand to take down Bear DeGrotti. But Johnny Books alone had seen the young one up close and personal. Twice. In East Africa, he'd managed to take down two of Johnny's oldest and dearest friends in the blink of an eye. If Johnny's guess was right, he was even faster than the old man. The second time he'd met the skinny guy with the thick wrists had been a complete shock. Johnny had been forced to scrape up this current gig from Saul Sweet, attorney to the wrongly incarcerated Don Anselmo Scubizi. He had been absolutely stunned when on the plane ride up to Boston, he'd found himself staring into those dark, dead eyes again. He couldn't move fast enough to avoid the man's darting hand. Before he knew it, the guy's finger was pressing his forehead. That simple touch had completely paralyzed Johnny. As Skunks drove the Lincoln Town Car, Johnny sat and remembered the whole thing vividly. While he'd wanted to scream at the doctors who stared down at him after he'd been transferred by ambulance to Boston's St. Eligius Hospital, Johnny couldn't budge an inch.
Do you think the paralysis is permanent, Doctor?
Well, I can't see a reason for him to be unable to move. That makes it probably a mental issue. Knowing that, I think he might be like this a long time.
And he might have been. if not for a fluke. His first and only night in the hospital, the nurses on his floor had ordered ice cream takeout from Friendly's. The portly RN who was checking in on Johnny had been in a hurry to get out to her melting cookies and cream sundae. While struggling to reset his IV with one hand, the impatient woman had banged him, accidentally, on the forehead.
Oh, my.
It was a one in a billion shot, but apparently her thumb had hit him just right.
Where the hell are my pants?
When he and the others had set off in search of the young guy and the old Chinaman, Johnny had kept a low profile. He'd stayed in the car at Logan while the others circulated the pictures they'd gotten from the video. He'd hunkered down in the back seat after they'd learned their quarry had gotten a cab to Quincy. And he had said a silent prayer to the Madonna when the angry neighbor with the crying baby had pointed out the big ugly stone church on the corner. Skunks had insisted he accompany him and another family henchman into the building. Thinking back on that now, it seemed that Johnny's luck was holding out.
It don't look like there's nobody home.
Skunks, remind me to speak to you later about your grandma.
What's she got to do with anything? Should we wait for him?
No way. Did you see all the fish tanks downstairs? These guys are heavy-duty weird. Can't we just, I don't know, leave them a nasty note or something?
That old guy was pretty fast. Sweet never told us what to do exactly. Maybe we just got to show him not to mess with us no more.
I'll look for a pen and paper.
Nah, yeah, I gotta be a stronger message. Hey, this is a gas stove, ain't it?
Oh.
Johnny Fungilo was still wishing that they'd opted to leave a note. Something with a lot of very cross underlines and angry exclamation points. Instead, Skunks turned on the gas and heaved a Coke can with a gasoline-filled rag stuffed in it into the kitchen. The three men ran as quickly as they could to outrun the blast. When flame met hissing gas, the explosion was instantaneous. With a rumbling burst, the entire kitchen erupted in a ball of brilliant fire. A wave of heat and flame belched through the open door even as Skunks was jumping into the front seat. Another explosion sounded from deeper inside the church. More breaking windows. Up the short flight of stairs, flames curled up from the open door. The fire ate a voracious path through the big building.
We're four blocks away, and I can still see the flames. Now that's a message.
In the back seat, Johnny Fungilo felt his stomach liquefy.
I still think we should have just left a note.
Reflected on the back window pane of the accelerating car, lethal licking fingers of flame sought the cold second story of Castle Shinanju. 1 minute before Mikey Skunks lobbed his fatal soda can, Remo and Chun were almost at the end of the long road home.
You're lucky they didn't call the cops.
Is generosity now a crime?
It is when you try to tip the waitress with blue counterfeit bills.
I fail to see the difference between my currency and the scraps of green you use. In fact, mine are superior, for as art, they are worth much more than their face value. And by killing their creator, you have made them collector's items.
You would have had a better time bartering with a six-pack of Billy Beer or an Action Comics number one, little father. Next time, just leave the check to me.
The old Korean's face was a dark scowl of incomprehension. He was thinking unpleasant thoughts about what constituted art in the Western world when the first small rumble reached their car.
You think the city's working on the roads this late at night?
Do not ask me. I am but a visitor to this backward land.
A succession of soft booms could be heard, all from a very specific direction. Behind the wheel, Remo began to feel the first soft knot of concern from deep in his belly. He saw the reflection of orange flame on the snow-lined street before they'd even reached the corner.
Oh, no.
Our home!
The entire first floor of the remodeled church was already ablaze. Flames threatened the second story. The master of Shinanju shot from the front seat like a bullet from a chamber. Arms and legs pumping in furious unison, he attacked the main stairs. Remo sprang around the car, flying in his teacher's wake up the staircase.
My possessions!
The front door was closed. One sandaled foot sent it crackling into the foyer. A vicious wall of fire and impenetrable black smoke burst out into the chill night. Remo ducked back from the flames. The hallway beyond was completely engulfed. Walls, floor, and ceiling formed a hellish path to the staircase. The stairs themselves crackled and burned.
Are you nuts? You can't go in there!
Unhand me!
Across the wall of flame, Remo could see the wizened Asian leaping from one burning stair to the next. In a heartbeat, he was gone.
Little father!
What the...
Remo was about to go in after him when he heard the sound of car door slamming out beside the building. It was followed by a squeal of tires.
Gotcha.
Twisting from the burning doorway, Remo sprang down the stairs like a demented grasshopper. Legs pumping in perfect, furious rhythm, he ate up the distance between front and side of the building, just in time to see the car speeding across the parking lot. He was shocked to see a familiar face in the back seat. Johnny Fungilo was slouched in the shadows, a half-dollar size bruise decorating his forehead. Shinanju had long ago trained Remo away from anger. Yet in that moment, it was not even simple anger, but pure, unbridled rage that descended like a pouncing primal thing on Remo Williams. Propelled by rage, Remo flew at the car. It was racing out into the street. He'd intercept it easily. Make Johnny Fungilo pay.
Remo!
Chun was framed in an upper story window, small and frail against the burning backdrop.
Help me!
Remo hesitated. Behind him, the car was speeding away. Fungilo hadn't even seen him. He flew back across the parking lot. Sliding to a stop beneath the open window, he threw out his arms.
Jump, little father! I got you!
Don't be stupid!
The old Korean's head disappeared back inside the upper story window. A moment later, Remo saw the sharp contours of a steamer trunk peek like a timid child over the windowsill. As soon as it had cleared the frame, the trunk rocketed downward at a speed far greater than the simple pull of gravity. When it reached his level, Remo reached out and snagged the trunk from the air as easily as if he were picking a ripe plum from a tree. Chun hadn't been in trouble. The master of Shinanju only wanted Remo to stand below the window and catch every one of his 14 lacquered steamer trunks. Chun's worried face appeared once more. Some relief came when he saw the trunk on the asphalt at Remo's feet.
This is why you stopped me!
Less chat, more catch.
Yet another trunk peeked over the sill.
Pay attention, imbecile!
The fire engines, followed by two ambulances, tore into the parking lot. Lights continued to flash all around the street, stabbing crazed patterns across snow and tar. Running firemen quickly hooked hoses to a nearby hydrant. By now, the ground floor and most of the second story were engulfed in flames. Windows shattered, sending shards of glass out across the sidewalk and parking lot.
Get out of here!
In a sec.
Now! We almost done here, little father!
Another of Jun's trunks appeared. It flew at supersonic speed to the ground below.
Ah!
Remo snatched it before it crushed the fireman to jelly.
My God! There's someone in there?
Yeah, but don't worry. He'll be through in a minute.
Get the life net!
As the firemen scrambled around one of the trucks, Remo took a rapid count of the trunks. 12. Only two more left.
Get the lead out, little father!
As Remo was piling it with the others, he noticed a hint of yellow silk sticking out of one side. Although some of the trunks remained packed in perpetuity, others had been emptied over the years. In the middle of this deadly inferno, Chun was packing. Fear and concern formed a tight ball in Remo's stomach.
Forget it, Chun!
Eight firemen ran through the parking lot from the street. They carried a collapsible aluminum device that they quickly folded open. It snapped into a rigid circle. A fireproof mesh was strung across the interior of the hollow metal tubes.
Stand back! Hurry, Chun!
Move!
At last, Chun appeared at the window. The sill was ablaze. The old man had to battle flames as he wrestled the last of his precious trunks out into the open air. It dropped like a stone. Remo snatched the trunk before it hit the life net. He put it with the rest.
Now, Chun!
Before he'd even finished the shouted plea, the old man sprang into view. He flew through the open window like a genie from a lamp. Once he'd cleared the wall of flame, Chun tightened himself into a ball and allowed gravity to take hold. A delicate collection of frail bone and flesh, he fell the two stories to the life net, hitting with no more force than a dropped feather. A few men grabbed out for him, but the old man slapped their helping hands away. He hurried to Remo's side.
Remo, our home!
I know, little father.
Nearby, men were running a hose to the open kitchen door. Pressurized water and searing flame fought a battle, the outcome of which was known already to all.
Let's get this man some oxygen!
I am fine.
Sadness laced his anger. His hazel eyes were fixed on the collapsing building. His and Remo's home for a decade.
We gotta get you to a hospital.
Damn it, he's fine.
Is there anyone else in there?
No.
By this time, the blaze was out of control. All the firefighters could do was wet it down and try to keep the embers from sparking other fires in the nearby houses. The roof of the former church collapsed completely, bringing down with it the glass-enclosed turret that was the entire third floor.
My meditation room. For years, I welcomed the morning sun there.
I know, little father.
Remo and Chun stood, silently watching. Remo had always insisted that he hated that building. When it became their home, it had been Chun's doing, not his. But as the old structure collapsed in on itself, he felt as if a piece of him were dying as well. Remo glanced down at the master of Shinanju. Chun said nothing. Chin jutting firmly in the air, he viewed the nightmarish scene through damp hazel eyes. He seemed so old and frail, so lost. And as the spit of sparks took flight in the cold night sky, like January fireflies, the hellish conflagration was reflected in the single salty tear that rolled down the old Korean's weathered cheek. The morning breeze that blew in from the Tyrrhenian Sea hinted at a mild Naples winter's day. It was a good wind. Not warm, but certainly not cold. It came from the east, from the direction of Corsica and Sardinia. Intolerable was the breeze from farther south, from hated Sicily. But this was not Sicilian air, thank God. It was good, fresh air from far north of that hated den of cutthroats and brigands.
No, not the Sicilian air.
White, early morning sunlight showered brilliantly over the vines below his terrace. Men already worked amid the tidy rows of dormant plants, pruning and tying the vines in preparation for the next growing season. Through tinted lenses, he looked up at the man who had just arrived on his patio.
Nothing yet?
Silencio so far.
Perhaps we were too clever.
Don't worry, sir. It's only been a few days since New Jersey. Less time since Cuba. Someone has to recognize it soon.
I am impatient, I know. It has been a long time. I suppose a few more days will do no more harm than the last 80 years. Avanti.
Alone once more, Don Vincenzo took another sip of wine. The wine was as disappointing as the news from America. He'd been a young man during World War II, back when the tanks of the Allies had rolled into Italy to crush the hated Il Duce once and for all. The old man had met many Americans then. Most had seemed quite clever. They had returned home from their great victory in Europe, only to raise dullards for children. He had been certain that they would have figured it out by now. It really wasn't even that clever. It had been designed to be obvious.
Well.
It was going to be a warm day. Maybe it would break a winter record. Crystal wine glass in hand, the old man pondered the weather. For some reason, Remo had left his phone off the hook. Smith had called steadily until 1 o'clock in the morning. After that, he had given up. Bone tired, the cure director had dragged himself home for a few hours of sleep. By 6 the following morning, he was back in his office. Smith pulled up the refer file. Without much trouble, he found the reference he wanted.
Saul Sweet, graduate of Harvard, attorney in New York City. One notable client.
Smith frowned as he read the client's name. He had hoped to never see it again.
Anselmo Scubisi.
Cure had had several run-ins with the New York crime family in the past, most notably with the deceased patriarch, Don Pietro. Remo had eliminated the old Don a decade ago. After his death, his son had taken control of the family's interests. But Anselmo Scubisi was in prison now. If it was he who was running Refair, he was doing so while a guest of the federal prison system.
Well, Mr. Sweet, we'll see what you say when you're interrogated by Remo.
Smith picked up the blue contact phone. Without looking at the old-fashioned dial, he quickly entered Remo's number.
Chun was probably disturbed by a telemarketer.
Smith turned his attention back to his computer screen. Refair. The dawning of a new day had not changed the feeling that it was still somehow familiar to him. With both hands, the Cure director drew open the middle desk drawer. He pulled a notebook and pencil out onto the flat surface of his desk. Sometimes, when high-tech equipment failed, it was best to go back to the basics. He carefully spelled out Refair in neat block letters. Once he was finished, he looked at what he'd written.
Refair.
Still no secret was revealed by speaking the word. Smith was sure that it was no acronym, either civilian or governmental, that he had ever encountered before. The word affair was obvious. It had occurred to him many times over the past few days. But the letter R at the beginning changed it completely.
R?
He placed a gnarled hand over the letter.
Affair.
Lifting his hand, he placed it over the last six letters of the word.
R?
All at once, the light dawned.
Affair.
With a thrill of discovery, he pulled his hand away. The Cure director was amazed when he looked down on those simple seven letters.
How could you have not seen this before? It's obvious.
R. Affair. Our affair. Or in Italian, Cosa Nostra. The Mafia was behind Refair after all. So brazen were they, the name appeared in the stock market listings of newspapers across the country and around the world. Organized crime was trading on Wall Street, with remarkable, frightening success.
Remo, where are you?
Smith looked up and was surprised to see Remo and Chun stepping in from his secretary's office. Both men appeared disheveled. The master of Shinanju in particular was dotted with a few small streaks of soot. The old man wore a funereal expression. Beside his teacher, Remo managed a weak smile.
Mind if we camp out here for a couple of nights, Smitty?
What is wrong?
Something happened to our house.
What?
It sort of burned down.
What? When?
A few hours ago.
It all spilled out at once. Remo retold the entire story to the visibly shaken Smith.
We were going to go to a hotel, but then I figured you might want to talk to me. And I didn't feel like calling and waking you up in the middle of the night to tell you what happened. So, well, here we are.
Remo looked shell-shocked. Smith couldn't remember ever seeing such a lost expression on the face of Cure's enforcement arm. Smith's fingertips were gripping the edge of his desk as he attempted to sort through this alarming information. He willed himself calm.
What caused the fire?
Vandals.
The old man stood quietly beside Remo, his face a wrinkled mask of sorrow.
I saw a bunch of guys driving away. They must have tracked us with that videotape. They weren't those guys with the masks.
I was afraid of this. Still, they found you more easily than I would have thought. Given the other attacks against you, I hope this doesn't mean there is some greater risk to exposure at work here.
Look, it's the tape, okay? It's not some big conspiracy that threatens your precious security. Now, can we please give it a rest? We've just been through hell.
I am sorry for your loss, but this could be of concern for Cure.
It's not, okay? We just need a place to stay, that's all.
There was something beneath his hot response. Smith didn't press it.
Your old quarters are available.
I knew we could count on you, Smitty.
But I do not think it's wise for you to stay here.
Why the hell not?
You said yourself that you believe the men from Refair, Boston, found you. They could do so again.
Using what? A freaking crystal ball?
By employing whatever means they used to find you the first time. Perhaps they even followed you down from Massachusetts.
We were not followed.
Perhaps not. Nonetheless, I still don't believe it is a good idea for the two of you to stay here.
Too bad, because we're staying.
Remo, I retain your quarters for our own private security reasons. There have been times over the past decade that have required short stays at Forecroft. However, if your house is a lost cause, I am presuming it is.
It's a smoking foundation.
In that event, you will want more permanent accommodations. I cannot supply them for you here.
We just need two goddamn rooms!
I worry that you would think this a permanent solution to your problem.
You know something, Smith? You're all heart. The Quincy Fire Department is still hosing down the pile of glowing embers that used to be our home, and you're already accusing us of overstaying our welcome.
I am being realistic.
You're being a heartless bastard, and I've got news for you. We're staying, so you better get used to the idea. I'll start bringing your trunks in, little father.
Not giving Smith another chance for argument, he spun on his heels and flung open the office door. When Remo prowled out of the room, Chun remained behind. The old Asian's gaze was tired and forlorn. Standing on that threadbare rug, the tiny little man looked every day of his 100+ years.
I trust you are all right, Master Chun.
I am not, Emperor. I have had something dear taken from me.
I am sorry.
It is not for you to apologize. That is for he who directed the Roman hordes to raise Castle Shilanju. Woe to him and his minions, for they will atone for this vile deed with their lifeblood.
Romans? Smith had forgotten all about his Refer Cosa Nostra discovery. He turned back to his computer screen.
I believe you were right about Lawrence Fine's killers. There is every indication now that this is Mafia-related.
I will avenge myself against the sons of Rome.
Smith had become more animated. Lost in cyberspace, it was as if he had already forgotten about the Asian's loss.
Chun, could you please send Remo in here when he is through with your luggage?
I live to do your bidding, Emperor. For it is all that remains for me in this hateful land.
Without bothering to even give an informal bow, the Master of Shenanju padded from the office. The white tip of Saul Sweet's nervous tongue brushed across his dry lips. Cold sweat had begun to break out across his back as he listened to the voice on the phone.
So that's the story, Mr. Sweet. It was real lucky Johnny Books knew the guy, or we wouldn't have even found the place.
Lucky? Do you idiots have any idea what you've done?
Sure, Mr. Sweet. We torched their house.
Stop it! And stop calling me by that name! I don't even know who that person is!
Closing his eyes, he gripped his entire forehead with one delicate hand. Sweet was trying to think how to tell Don Scubizi about this disaster.
Okay, here's what you do. Don't go back to the office. Don't go back to your friend's house to get your things. Go to the bank. Get as much cash as you can. You don't want to leave any kind of traceable trail for a month. Just come back home and lay lower than you've ever laid low before.
Sure thing, Mr.
Just come back here and bring those two other morons with you.
Yeah, okay. But you heard me before when I told you that we didn't kill those two guys, right?
Fumbling in a dead panic, Saul Sweet slammed down the phone as if it were a living thing.
God, what do I do now?
They'd gotten Paul Petito. Skunks said that the street was filled with cops when they tried to go back there. Time for damage control. They'd shut the Boston office for now. Thanks to internet trading, the satellite offices were redundant anyway. Ideally, they would move entirely into the electronic realm within the next 5 years. But there was a monkey wrench thrown into the whole plan now. Those two men who had entered the picture had first confused and now threatened everything, including Saul Sweet's life if Don Scubizi was found to be in a less than forgiving mood. And now the idiot hirelings had made matters worse by antagonizing the two men instead of killing them. Fumbling up out of his chair, Saul held his throbbing chest as he stumbled over to the well-stocked bar. Remo hauled the Master of Shenanju's trunks from his car to their Falcroft quarters. Not all of Chun's luggage had fit in Remo's car. They had been forced to leave some of the trunks in a rented hotel room up in Massachusetts.
You want it with the rest, little father?
Remo carted the fourth and final trunk into the Master of Shinanju's room.
Wherever you leave it does not matter.
The old Korean sat in the middle of the floor. He hadn't even chosen the trunks his pupil was bringing into the room. Before they left Quincy, he'd allowed Remo to pick four at random.
I'll get the other 10 shipped down quick as I can.
You are a good son, Remo.
Yeah, yeah. You want anything? Tea, maybe?
I am not thirsty. Besides, I told you that Smith wishes to see you.
Screw Smith. The bastard was about to turn us out in the snow. You're more important than anything he has to say.
Thank you, Remo. But your presence is not balm enough for me this day. Go serve your emperor. This is a familiar environment.
Okay, I guess.
At the bedroom door, he paused. He couldn't believe what he was about to say.
You want me to run out and pick you up some replacement country CDs?
No. There will be no joy until vengeance is served. Smith was babbling when I left. I believe he is using his oracles to locate he who commands the Romans who destroyed Castle Shinanju.
Sitting cross-legged on his tatami mat, Chun looked old and frail. He made no move to unpack his things. Remo had even had to roll out the mat for him. Around the master of Shinanju were his four precious lacquered trunks. Still at his computer, Smith looked up over the tops of his rimless glasses when the door opened.
Okay, here's the deal. Remember those guys I killed in that East African restaurant a couple of months back? Well, I didn't kill all of them. Flash forward to a couple of days ago, and who do I run into on my connector flight back from Puerto Rico but the goon that got away? I thought I took him out of action without killing him this time. But I guess something went wrong, because the same thick neck was in the car last night with the other two guys who burned down our house. I don't know what happened, or how he got loose after I put the whammy on him, but the fact is he did, and he led the rest of them right to me. So it's all my fault. Me. I led them to us. And before you ask, no, Chun doesn't know.
Remo had hoped the confession would make him feel better. It didn't. And the critical look the cure director was giving him didn't help matters. Smith sat motionless behind his desk.
You are certain it was the same man?
I wish I wasn't. I figure he must have tracked me from the plane somehow. I took a cab that day.
Do you plan to tell Chun?
Eventually. Someday. You know how he is, Smitty. He carps at me when the cable goes out or when it rains more than 2 days in a row. I don't even want to think about what he's going to put me through for something that's actually my fault. Especially something this big.
This individual you encountered before, you met him on the New York to Boston leg of your flight?
Yeah.
As Smith began typing, Remo stuffed his hand gloomily into his pockets. He was reaching for his small stone-carved good luck charm when his fingers brushed something else.
Oh, by the way, here's another one for your collection.
He flung the object across the office. It landed between Smith's outstretched hands with a tiny click. The cure director picked it up.
Another button.
I pulled it off the guy who went kerblooey at that counterfeiter's house.
I've had no luck tracing this symbol.
Well, it obviously means something to those guys because they're blowing off their own heads to protect whoever's behind it.
Or to protect themselves from whoever is behind it. I will continue to research the design.
Why did I just knock him out, Smitty? I should have ripped off his arms.
Remo, now is not the time for self-indulgence.
You sure? Because it really feels right just about now.
Did Chun mention to you that the Mafia was involved with Rafaera after all?
No.
I have deduced that Rafaera's verbal shorthand for our affair.
That sounds familiar.
It should. That is its English translation from the Italian Cosa Nostra. Thanks to the counterfeiter's information, I was able to backtrack to a Manhattan attorney by the name of Saul Sweet. He has several criminal clients. I would guess that he is acting as a go-between for one of them. Ah, your arsonist is one John Fungilo.
You sure?
He was the only individual removed from your flight by ambulance. According to the records, he was suffering from a mysterious form of temporary paralysis that reversed itself several hours after he was admitted to the hospital. He checked himself out.
Where can I find him, Smitty?
His legal residence is the home of his mother in Jersey City.
Smith was reading the scant information available on Johnny Books.
Interesting. He is not a known member of the Scubisi crime family.
Remo thought after the previous night that he'd reached his quota of fresh surprises, but at Smith's mention of the famous Mafia family, his hard face relaxed to confusion.
Scubisi? What have they got to do with this?
Sweet's most prominent client is Anselmo Scubisi.
Isn't he in jail?
Yes, but it's possible that he is still running his illegal empire from behind bars. It's been done by criminals before. Even so, the connection is tenuous. I suppose we need something more concrete to implicate Anselmo Scubisi.
You need something concrete. I've got what I want. Give me that fungus guy's address.
There is no guarantee that he will be there. If you act rashly now, you could scare off Fungilo as well as his two accomplices. Better to learn who all three are, so that we can plan a stratagem against all of them.
Before Remo could argue, an electronic beep sounded from the depths of Smith's desk. The Cure mainframes, deep in the bowels of Falcroft's basement, had pulled some new data from the net. Smith brought up the latest information.
Interesting. Rafa has finally established a corporate headquarters. It opened in New York this morning.
Wasn't that place you sent me and Chun to their HQ?
No. Lippincott Forsyth Butler merely coordinated Refair's startup. Until now, it has been an entity without a visible head, which was why I've had such a difficult time tracking ownership.
Okay, so now that we've got a home base, we can find out for certain who's behind it.
Smith was staring down at his desk, a sober expression on his gray face. His fingers were resting on his buried keyboard.
We know now.
Why? What have you got?
The Cure director looked up, his flinty eyes flat.
I know this address.
From the outside, the Neighborhood Improvement Association in Manhattan's Little Italy appeared largely as Remo remembered it. After parking his car farther down the block, he and Chun stopped on the sidewalk in front of the Mott Street entrance. Around them, Chinatown continued to encroach on what had formerly been exclusive Italian-American territory.
Did you not slay the Roman lord who ruled from this ugly castle?
That was Don Pietro. Thanks to good old-fashioned mafia nepotism, his kid took over where he left off. Although Smith says he doesn't technically own the joint anymore. He had to sell it to some dummy corporation for legal expenses or something. Come on.
They mounted the stairs and passed beneath the shiny new Refair sign on their way through the front door. They found that the real change had taken place within. The aroma of tomato sauce and the ancient fuzzy wallpaper were both gone, as was the old world gloom. Stylish artwork now hung from whitewashed walls. Several of the downstairs rooms had been opened up. This one big room was filled with fresh-faced young men in long-sleeved dress shirts. They were performing a frantic dance from computer terminals to telephones. To Remo, they looked as if they'd been transplanted to Little Italy from some sterile Wall Street office.
I don't like it. It had a kind of untouchables charm before. Look, they even got rid of the guys who used to shoot at you when you walked in.
They were past the empty receptionist desk and had reached the end of the hall where old Don Pietro used to have a private office. Remo was reaching for the door when he felt a bony hand press his forearm. When he looked down at the master of Shinanju, there was a hard glint in the old man's eyes.
We are not here for Smith's nonsense. We are here to learn who it was that burned Castle Shinanju.
I know, little father.
His pupil's tone brought the first hint of suspicion to the old Korean's face. He squinted one eye as he examined the younger man.
What is wrong?
Huh? Nothing. Nothing's wrong. What makes you think there's anything wrong? Anyway, our goals mesh with Smith's here. He just wants us to find out who's running the show.
Just as long as you know which is more important.
The old walnut door had been lovingly sanded and refinished. When Remo's palm touched the surface, the beautiful antique door exploded viciously into the room. Inside, a hairy little man with slicked-backed hair sat at a polished oak desk. When he saw Remo and Chun explode into his office a split second after the door, the tumbler of scotch whiskey he'd been lifting to his lips slipped from his shaking hand. Sweet's heart problem started to kick up almost at once, the rhythm wildly fluctuating.
Oh, God, no!
No introductions in order, I see.
His face brightened when he saw the two other men in the office.
Now they're more like it.
Sweet's two huge bodyguards were lumbering up out of their chairs. Chun stood between them and Remo.
Why don't you have them out front? Give them some frayed lawn chairs, maybe a couple of muscle shirts. You know, if he knew what you'd done to this place, Don Pietro would be spinning in his grave right about now.
Get out! You're trespassing here! I can use force against you!
Oh, sounds serious. More force than that?
He jerked his thumb to one side. Sweet heard two soft thuds hit the wall-to-wall carpet even before his eyes darted right. Chun stood between Sweet's two bodyguards, his arms upraised. Suspended from each of his extended index fingers was a guard. The master of Shinanju had snagged each man with a long talon in the soft tissue beneath his chin.
I know. I keep telling him that those nails are just too long.
Neither of Saul's two bodyguards appeared to be doing much in the way of living. The sound Sweet had heard was that of their guns striking the floor. The weapons sat useless below their dead, dangling toes. Like a demented orchestra conductor holding a note too long, Chun bore the men along. When his nails at last withdrew, the two behemoths collapsed into a 600-pound pile of limp Sears polyester blend suits.
Anselmo Scubisi, he tells me what to do. He's serving three consecutive life sentences at Ogdenburg Federal Penitentiary in Missouri. I can drive you to the airport.
Chun had circled the desk and was standing below him. Sweet's arrhythmia was now putting pressure on his already weakened heart muscle.
Did you or he order the destruction of our home?
Neither one of us did. Those men acted entirely on their own. Well, for the house burning part, not the killing you part. They were sent to do that, but that was obviously before I knew what wonderful, caring, dangerous people you both are.
May I take a nitroglycerin capsule?
No.
Splendid.
Are you the one who's sending all these lunatic hitmen and ski masks after me?
Hitmen? No, just the ones who burned down your house. Did I mention how terrible I feel about that?
On the other side of the desk, Remo frowned. The lawyer wasn't lying. Remo had been sure the attacks of the past few days had been the work of whoever was behind Refair.
Where are your lackeys that they might pay for their wicked deed?
Here, let me...
He staggered to his desk. With a shaking hand, he wrote down three names on a yellow legal pad.
They're hiding. I don't know where they are, but that's them, I swear.
The old Korean accepted the paper. Sweet felt a pinch of relief when Chun retreated to the other side of the desk.
Well, if that's all the business we have, I think I'll just call up an ambulance.
Not all. What the hell is this Refair thing all about?
Oh, that? Mr. Scubizzi has opened up the business opportunities of organized crime to the masses.
Remo looked to Chun. The old man was interested only in the scrap of paper in his hand. He turned back to Sweet.
You're doing what with the what now?
A lot of people have a lot of money to invest these days. More regular folks are building portfolios. Scubizzi is giving the common man the opportunity to invest in what's historically been a very lucrative field.
Remo blinked. He didn't like the sound of where this was heading. Evidently, Smith had been right.
Refair exists as a public cover for the Scubizzi crime family, as well as several others. Money generated by stock purchases goes to developing company infrastructure. Refair expands, investors reap dividends, company grows, new investors come aboard, Refair expands more. Is this room spinning?
No.
Anyway, with the money we've made already, we've been able to invest in better methods for narcotics distribution, which feeds a host of other ventures, like gambling, prostitution, bribery. Our great success has been passed on to our stockholders.
You're telling me ordinary people are buying stock in the mob?
An archaic term.
How do people even know about all this? It's not like you could take out an ad in the Wall Street Journal.
When the stock's hot enough, word gets around.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Remo was turning from Sweet's switching body when a sudden thought occurred to him.
Oh, crud.
Quickly flipping the lawyer onto his back, he drummed his fingertips hard on his chest, just above the heart. Catching the rhythm of the fluttering attack, Remo established a counter-rhythm that he forced the muscle to follow.
Oh.
The arrhythmia caught, slowed, and tripped to a normal pace. Saul Sweet's eyes rolled open.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I forgot to ask. They said in Boston you got a copy of that tape with us on it.
There. Hey.
As Remo went over and popped the door, the attorney sat up. The pain was gone in his chest and arm. Even the lightheadedness had vanished. His face was flushed as his color returned.
This it?
It's the only copy. I took it from the direct satellite feed.
Great. Off you go.
The hard look in the intruder's eyes told Sweet precisely what Remo meant.
Well, wait! Where's Ensemble getting the cash for all this? The Scubizzi family's been broke for years. Ensemble's been spending it like water these past few months. Believe me, I don't come cheap either. I think there's someone behind...
An odd sensation had just flitted under his ribcage. Different from anything he'd ever experienced before.
Oh my.
Someone other than the Dippy Dons behind this?
Scubizzi, 24A, answer questions.
His voice grew more labored as he looked down in utter confusion at his own chest. The pain was back, worse than ever.
What's happening?
Huh? Oh, that. That's just your heart exploding.
At that precise moment, the struggling muscle in his chest swirled and burst, flooding his thoracic cavity. Face contorting in a rictus of excruciating death, the lawyer crashed to the floor.
Can we go now?
Yeah. No,
Wait. A fire for a fire.
Remo found a wastebasket next to the desk. He filled it with computer paper from an idle printer.
That should do it.
Pushing the wooden desk against the wall, Remo sat the wastebasket on the floor in the desk's footwell. He lit the paper with a lighter collected from one of the dead bodyguards. Once the fire had started, he smashed the lighter on the desk's surface.
I am certain that the video you are holding will burn quite nicely.
Good idea. Now I'm ready.
When they left the office, the surface of the desk had already flashed to life, igniting the wall behind it. Smoke and flames were spitting out the door as they crossed the foyer. The young men in starched white shirts continued to race around the open room, oblivious to the fire that was rapidly engulfing the small back office. Suddenly, chaos erupted in the Neighborhood Improvement Association. Men shoved and screamed on their way to the exits. Some jumped out the one open window, while others smashed the sealed windows with chairs and computer monitors. Screeching brakes and honking horns rose up from Mott Street. Outside now, Remo cast one last glance at the growing wall of flame.
Finally, Smith can aid us in our quest. Let us hide to his stronghold.
As long as we're in the neighborhood, let's check out the address Sweet gave up first. It's supposed to be right here on Mott Street.
If it is not the address of the grape stompers who burned down my home, then it is irrelevant.
We'll get to them, little father. Promise. But we're here now, so wouldn't it be easier to get this out of the way now than have to come back?
Very well. But be quick about it.
Remo used the business card Sweet had given him to steer them to the right address. As they strolled down the sidewalk, the master of Shenanju glanced at his pupil several times. His brow finally sank low.
You are hiding something.
Huh? What do you mean?
Please, Remo. As an actor, you make a truly great assassin.
The guilt was more than Remo could bear. Since there was no good time for this, he decided to get it out of the way.
You know, when you went up to get your trunks...
I am not without memory, even at my age.
That car that drove away... I knew one of the guys.
Explain yourself.
Remember how I told you about that guy I'd met on the plane? The guy I'd seen when we were in East Africa?
Spare me your tedious antics. I did not listen then, and I am not interested now.
Turns out the guy from East Africa was one of the guys who burned down our house.
The master of Shinanju's eyes split wide. Stunned white orbs grew large beyond vellum lids.
You led him to us!
I guess. He must have helped them track me from that video. I'm sorry, little father.
He waited to be screamed at, to be told he was an idiot and a blunderer. Instead, he was met with silence. For Remo, it was far worse than all the other alternatives combined. When he glanced up, the master of Shinanju was still staring at him. The Korean's face had grown utterly flat.
Aren't you going to say something?
Words elude me.
Remo thought he'd braced himself for anything, but the master of Shinanju's troubling stillness caught him off guard.
Do something, then.
Like what? You are too old to spank and too important to my village to slay.
I don't know. Maybe a punch in the arm or something. I mean, anything.
Chun stroked his wispy beard thoughtfully. His slender fingers had not reached the thready tip before Remo felt an increase in air pressure beside him. He didn't duck out of the way. Eyes closed, he took his medicine, allowing the bony hand to smack him soundly in the side of the head.
Ow!
That did not help.
Worked for me.
Rubbing the side of his head, Remo trailed the master of Shinanju down the street.